started in 67 in San Diego with about 400 or 500 law enforcement officers. So we have a couple events that are geared towards police, and we also have some fire-specific events.
You know, the inclusion of firefighters was the natural progression.
We model ourselves around the Olympic events. We have the archery, the basketball, the baseball, and all the team sports.
When you're young in the fire department, I'm sure the police department as well, you don't think about your health and wellness at retirement. But our games, again, provide an outlet for those folks to maintain their health, give them something to look forward to, you know, travel around the world, see your friends and fellow competitors, and it's a benefit to your health.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Edmund Russell. He's the executive director, and Jim King, who's the vice president of the California Police Athletic Federation, about U.S. Police and Fire Championships, which is all about health and wellness for first responders. Remember to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and visit our website, respondertv.com, for all the past episodes and guest information. We'll be back to speak with Edmund and Jim after this. In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Lumley, LCSW EMTB. And we're excited to have this conversation today with Edmund and Jim. In my career as a firefighter, one of my favorite things was sports, fitness, athletics, and teamwork. And in my day, we did stuff like stair climbs and some agility, mud runs, and even triathlons together. So I think what U.S. Police and Fire Championships are up to is on a whole different level. Excited to find out more. So quick bio. Edmund Russell is the executive director of the California Police Athletic Federation. That's the CPAF. Edmund recently retired from the Los Angeles Police Department after providing 31 years of service to the city of Los Angeles. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Edmund was an accomplished tennis player in both the U.S. and World Games since 1988, earning many medals. And over the past 10 years, he's been instrumental in developing new updates for sporting events within the organization. I think we're going to definitely dive into that because you guys have some very interesting events. Jim King is recently elected Vice President of the California Police Athletic Federation, CPAF. Jim retired as a captain from the Indianapolis Fire Department after 30 years of service, and thank you, Jim, for your service. He began his public safety athletic career as a powerlifter for the Police and Fire Sports Festival in 1993, and then at the 1995 World Police and Fire Games held in Melbourne, Australia. He has since not missed a single World Police and Fire Games. Very impressive. Jim continues to have a passion for his sports responsibilities that include bench press, push-pull, stair race, and the ultimate firefighter, among other events. Welcome to Respond to Resilience, Edmund and Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having us, David.
Boy, just reading those bios gives me a couple ideas for questions. Then hopefully we'll come back around to it. I want to know more about the ultimate firefighter. But first, let's kind of talk about background history and that sort of thing. What is the U.S. Police and Fire Championships, and why is it important to the first responder community to participate? I'll pitch that out to whichever one of you wants to start.
Well, I can start since I'm here in California. Back in 1967, our late founder, Duke Niles, and a couple of the guys from a little up north in L.A. decided they wanted to have an event for police and firefighters, like a little competitive event. And it was only started here in California for police officers. And it started in 67 in San Diego and started with about 400 or 500 officers, law enforcement officers. And it grew to, by the time I came in the games, it was the California Police Olympics, only for police officers. And my first games, as you said in my bio, was 88 in Bakersfield, California. And by that time, they had up to 5,000 competitors, police only. That's how it started, and it just grew and grew and grew. And then we decided, or I wasn't part of the board at the time, they decided to bring fire on. And they wanted to bring fire on capacity in the World Police and Fire Games, and they had this world event, and that took off. So we have the U.S. Police and Fire Championships, which had about four different names since we started the Police Olympics, the California Police Games, then the Summer Games, then the Western State Games, and now it's evolved into U.S. Police and Fire Championships, where we allow police, fire, corrections from all of the United States to be in this game. In the last couple of years, we've changed our eligibility, where we now allow some of our civilian partners, EMT, the people that work right directly side by side, dispatchers, crime scene investigators, and our jailers. So it's grown to that level where we're starting to involve them. And I think this podcast is going to help us immensely, because a lot of these people don't know. And we have a marketing strategist, and she's our director of marketing, Nicole. And one of our initiatives that we're starting this year is going to be on health and wellness. And I know I've reached out to people from other organizations, sporting organizations, unions on police departments, to get the word out and to see what we can do to help let people know that we're out here and that we're a guide to keep ourselves healthy physically and mentally.
Yeah, that's all huge. And that's obviously something that we're talking about a lot is wellness, not only physical, but mental health wellness. So kudos for that. And thanks for your focus on that. Jim, can you speak a little bit about the significance of adding fire into this kind of event?
Yeah, thanks, David. It is the natural progression of our event. Again, Duke and a gentleman named Bob Burke back in the 60s, you know, they wanted to, you know, provide that outlet for sport competition and camaraderie within the police of California. And I think they quickly realized that, you know, years later, it's proven that, you know, the moves that have been made to include firefighters, and now, you know, it went from just, you know, not just firefighters, but corrections and customs. And now, you know, we're delving into, you know, the civilian side of things with volunteer firefighters and you know, EMT paramedics, people of that nature. So, you know, the inclusion of firefighters was the natural progression. I know in Indianapolis, I was very fortunate to work really closely with the police department. And, you know, David, I don't know about your experiences, but, you know, there's a lot of places where the police officers and firefighters, you know, may have a distant relationship. And, you know, that's absolutely not the case in Indianapolis. We have always been, you know, very close when it comes to public safety, and we truly consider ourselves a public safety family here in the Midwest. So, you know, the inclusion for competition was, you know, again, it was just a natural part of the process or the evolution of our games. And, you know, the steps that we've recently taken to take it even further, we're really excited about.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, we do see, you know, smaller scale competitions. It could be hockey, you know, the Guns and Hoses, basketball. Sometimes you know, we've done more like calisthenic kind of competitions between police and fire. But you guys offer a huge array of sports and events. And I looked on the website, and some of them were ones that, you know, you don't typically see. They're certainly not what you would consider Olympic events. But, Edmund, could you talk a little bit about more typical events that you hold? And then what are some of them that are a little bit outside the mainstream?
Well, some of the more typical events that we hold are, you know, some of the Olympic sports. You know, we model ourselves around the Olympic events. So we have the archeries, the basketball, the baseball, and all the team sports of that matter, the tennises. One of the things that we do have, that we have like this competition called TCA, Toughest Competitor Alive. And now it's called Toughest Competitor Alive because before we had firefighters, used to be Toughest Cop Alive. So, and then we allowed the firefighters in and they just start kicking our butts. So some of the cops said, okay, we got to get in better shape to get in here and keep our status as the toughest, you know, cops, firefighters, competitor, as you call it. So we have a couple events that are geared towards police. We have shooting events. We have PAP, PPC, which is pistol competition. And then we have the rifles, the long rifles, and the short rifle and air rifle. Of that, and we also have some fire-specific events. And Jim will talk about those because he knows those like he's asleep. I know him just by watching them.
Sure.
So the stairways, anyone could do a stairways, but I wouldn't try and get on a competition of stairways with full gear on if I don't know what I'm doing. And that's something that firefighters do. So we have some events geared towards firefighters, and we have some geared towards police officers. But both sides compete in them. We've recently added dodgeball, which is like we have a couple fun sports. And when we do dodgeball, it's normally done sort of like a prime time sport, so we can involve and include more people. So once you're done with your sport, you can form a team and come to the convention center or wherever registration is and have a dodgeball team. It's huge in our World Games, and it's this year we had about 12 teams in our U.S. Games, which is pretty good. And one of the more recent, well, two of the more recent sports that we've added is cornhole and pickleball because they're very, very popular right now in the police community and in the community, period. So we had about 65 to 70 competitors this year in cornhole. So it's getting up there, and we have some coordinators that are just going to bring this to the next level.
Fun stuff. Yeah. So it sounds like there's something there for everybody. When these competitions are kind of evaluated or scored, is it team versus team, fire versus police? Like, how do you kind of break it down?
Well, as Edmund said, you know, we compete, you know, against everyone generally. The only sport that is fire for fire is the stair race when it's the full gear competition. And you know, that's for obvious reasons. You know, most of our stair race events, we're doing it on air. So they're not only in turnouts, but they're doing it on air. And, you know, there's that safety factor that certainly there are police officers that are in great enough shape to compete at that. But, you know, it's the knowledge, specific knowledge of the SCBA and that type of equipment. But, you know, there have been some police events like SWAT competition. You know, obviously those are just SWAT teams or comprised of SWAT teams. And the PAP and PPC, generally it's police for the police action pistol, because that's the kind of training and certification they have to require. But overall, you know, the team sports, you know, soccer teams, we have a fire team versus a police team. A lot of times our bracketing, it's luck of the draw. You know, you may compete solely against firefighter teams, but more than not, you know, you're probably going to compete against, you know, teams that are made up from corrections. We see that a lot in the U.S. games, especially with one of our sports, softball. And it's really the camaraderie within those agencies and the spirit of competition between, you know, a customs team versus, you know, a team from corrections, or you can have a sheriff's team versus a police officer team. You know, there's these inner agency kind of rivalries, if you will. You know, we have Border Patrol that shows up, participates in our games, especially in soccer and softball. And it really is fun, you know, to see the agencies that have, you know, typically worked together. Now that we've expanded, you know, our eligibility, it's fun to see those people show up and compete against, you know, not just the traditional, you know, police and fire units. It's everybody out there now, and they seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, fantastic how it's inclusive of these other responder organizations. I know I mentioned this earlier, but I'm curious, what is the ultimate firefighter?
Well, the ultimate firefighter is an event that is, it's an obstacle course, you know, that contains job-related specific fire events. Now, this event was created by one of our former directors who has since passed away, Jamie Walton. And Jamie came up with an idea, and Jamie was a retired captain out of Calgary and was on a heavy rescue and very involved in softball and hockey, as you might imagine somebody from Calgary would be. But Jamie created the event. And unlike, you know, some obstacle course type events, this one is comprised of four events, and it's an aggregate time of all four events. Each competitor will do the single event, each of the four events. And then you, you know, you add the times or combine time, you know, for the overall score. The events are hose task, weight and strength, obstacle course, and the high rise. The high rise, for example, is you're going up a four-story tower, running multiple times, carrying things like chainsaws, high rise packs, you know, equipment of that nature. And so, boy, it'll knock the wind out of your sails. The hose competition is you're running a distance, you're rolling hose, you're carrying hose. You're doing those things like, you know, firefighters are used to making donut rolls or deploying donut rolls. And in this case, you've got to, you know, package the hose and place it in a certain location without it coming apart. And, you know, there's some skill, you know, involved in that, David, with your experience as being a firefighter. The weight and strength is just as it sounds. It's where we're, you know, we're swinging a hammer at the Kaiser, the dead blow hammer. We're dragging a dummy, you know, we're carrying heavy obstacles, and, you know, it's a lot of fun. So for those people that are, you know, more like me, you know, cardio is not exactly my forte. I'm not a distance runner, but the strength aspect, you know, I would certainly make up, you know, time in that. So, you know, whether you're a distance runner or, you know, you're, you know, a person that, you know, likes to bang the weights and CrossFit, this event, you know, has a combination of all of those. And it is really, really grown in popularity. The first year that we had this was at the World Games in 2005 in Quebec City, Canada. It's just blown up from there. And it's amazing how other countries around the world have adopted this. You know, we were just in Rotterdam this past summer, and the Europeans are crazy about, you know, the ultimate. And we have huge numbers coming from Brazil. There was probably 40 competitors from Brazil alone. Wow. That travel to compete in the ultimate. And they are some tremendous athletes. I'm telling you, they could be some of the most fit firefighters in the world. You should see these folks, men and women. And that's another thing that's encouraging about the event is, you know, we're seeing the numbers increase for our females and in the ultimate. And so it's really exciting. The competition is very stiff, and the people take it very seriously. You know, it's done in what I call pro pads. We're just wearing, you know, the gear from the waist up, you know, turn up coat, fire helmet, you know, air pack, things of that nature.
But we allow, you're not on air.
No, we're not on air. Mm-hmm. And we allow the competitors to wear, you know, like gym shorts, athletic shorts, and tennis shoes for safety reasons, obviously. But yeah, it's a neat event. I don't know if we've got any video or we can send you something, but you could look it up online as well, David. I'm sure there are a lot of YouTube videos of the Ultimate Firefighter and to give you some sense of what it's about. But, you know, it's one I'm certainly proud of. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah. Wow, I love it. In fact, it's functional and it's job-related, makes it even that much better.
When it comes to occupational cancer exposures, members of the fire service are some of the highest-risk professionals nationwide. Firefighters Against Cancer and Exposures, also known as the FACES Foundation, is an advocacy organization established to bring awareness, resources, and peer support to responders in need of additional help in battling potential cancer diagnoses or critical concerns. The FACES Foundation was established by a national alliance of first responders to offer supplemental resources for firefighters. One of its core initiatives is cancer awareness in the form of prevention and early detection, supporting vigilance about occupational cancers and cancer recurrence through our national Get Checked Now campaign. Also, the FACES Foundation publishes a major public catalog of resources for the many areas of need, including information on clinical and mental health therapies, benefits and compensations, funding sources and financial strategies. For more information, please visit the FACES website at facesusa.org.
Edmund, if an organization or a team or a bunch of responders are interested in participating in the games, like what's kind of the nuts and bolts to get involved?
Well, we have like our website, and they can go on to USPFC.org, and that's the United States Police and Fire Championships. Or if they want to go on CPAF, CPAF.org, that gives all of our events. So we have four events that we have right now. We have the U.S. Games, which is every June, or the World Games, which is a biannual event, so that's every 2 years. This year was a little different because we postponed the 21 games to 22 because of COVID. And then starting next year in Winnipeg, the World Games will go back to its two-year cycle. So along with those two events, last year we started an event called the First Responders Relay. So that's a relay that's up for 50-mile, about a 50-mile relay with nine runners that goes to the Boulder, Nevada, Arizona area up there by Lake Mead, California. Lake Mead, Nevada. You know, it's right there. It's right there on the border of Arizona. I'm always saying Arizona, California, Nevada, but it's right up there, like on the Nevada border of Arizona, up there by the Hoover Dam. Yeah. And then next year, we're going to be starting a new event. Right now, it's tentatively scheduled for eight events. It's going to be our North American Fall Classic. It's going to be something a little new where we're going to be involving countries, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada to compete in this brand new, beautiful facility in Mesa, Arizona called Bellbank Park. It's a 320-acre facility, and right now the interest is really high because it's going to be going from November 1st through the 5th, 2023. And that's a time of year where there's nothing really going on. For competitors and athletes and people to do. So they want the good weather. They want to compete. And I think that's going to be a huge success for us. But, you know, time will tell.
And what's the nature of that event?
Most of it's going to be a team sport. So It's going to be like a mini summer games, but it'll be in the fall. So right now we have eight sports. We have baseball, basketball, jiu-jitsu, cornhole, flag football, pickleball, soccer, and softball. There might be a couple others that come in there between now and then, but we have to see where we are with the facility.
Well, great stuff. So you're really offering a lot of different events, and seems like there's something for everybody. Talking a lot about mental health on this show, it's obviously become a big conversation in fire, police, CMS, and all the responder communities. You talk a little bit about, you know, as far as the USPFC, how do you help to promote mental health and physical wellness?
Well, David, as you know, this is definitely in the forefront now, and it's gaining steam out of necessity. You know, I heard you speak about, you know, your experiences and you know, one of your counterparts in Danbury, and, you know, it struck a chord in me. You know, I was in charge of the Recruit Academy in Indianapolis, and we were doing a lot of hiring of former, you know, prior military folks. And many of those folks had, you know, experiences from the Middle East and Afghanistan and Iraq, and everything that you were saying, you know, really, really hit home with me, you know, seeing some of these young kids coming into the fire department. And, you know, when I think of them, you know, the stress levels that they had already been exposed to, we couldn't even replicate in the academy. And we didn't even really try. But, you know, we do have to be mindful of their mental wellness. And, you know, it sometimes takes one event that triggers, you know, the PTSD in someone. And so, you know, Indianapolis, part of the 10 cities committee, I'm sure you've heard of those, David. You know, they really worked with the IAFF and the international on mental health issues for the fire department. And, you know, one of your statistics there at the beginning, you know, there's more public safety officers losing their lives to their own hands now than has ever happened before. And that's really unfortunate. So we all need to be mindful of that. We should be watching out for each other. And, you know, the CPAF and all of our events that Edmund just mentioned, you know, it's an outlet. It's an outlet to blow off some steam and to have a good time and, you know, to reflect on what it is that we do and talk to other people. One of the greatest things about my involvement in the World Police and Fire Games and now the USPFC is the people, quite honestly, you know, and even being here talking to you is an honor. And, you know, hopefully there will be things that will come from this relationship. But, you know, I've met so many folks that we share so much in common on a world level, David, that we don't even really realize. You know, the opportunity to get together again and, you know, maybe have a beer or some other beverage, if you will, and just to talk about things, you realize that, hey, I'm not in this alone. You know, there is help out there. There's a lot of folks that are dealing with issues that you can reach out to. And, you know, we just want to help further those causes. We, you know, again, under Edmund's, you know, leadership in the office there, our president, Larry Collins, you know, we're keen on this now, and we're going to push these causes as far as we can. One of our associate directors on the World Games side, Buck Best, you know, he is a clinician from Fairfax County, Virginia Fire Department. And so we've even got someone on our board that has been directly involved in the mental health aspects of these things. And, you know, just having conversations with those folks is a great thing. And, you know, it's our hope that, you know, we can be an outlet for those people. And if nothing else, you know, maybe they can find someone to talk to and in a time of need.
You guys are both retired after 30 plus years of service, and retirees are part of these games, correct?
Yes, sir, they are.
And
a very big part of these games.
Because to me, that's a huge piece. We know that retirees are really having a difficult time in the first year out. Can you talk a little bit about how retirees interact in these games and kind of their role and how you're seeing this perhaps help retirees with finding a purpose after leaving the job?
Well, what I see being in this office, I didn't see it as much like being a competitor, because I was like so engulfed in getting prepared for competing in tennis and basketball, depending on which sport I was going to do at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a really big outlet for a lot of these guys. And Jim can attest to this as well. We've had to raise our age limit on a lot of the sports, because a lot of our competitors, they compete and compete and compete until they can't compete anymore. So it's a real big outlet for some of them. And there's people out there have been competing in these games since the inception. Wow. There's a couple, I can name a couple, John Rogers as one of them. He calls me every year saying, Edmund, this guy got hit by a car last year on his bicycle 3 or 4 months before the games. Mm-hmm. And he showed up in San Diego and competed. So this is a big part for a lot of our retirement community. They love these games. They compete until they can't compete anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's just an outlet for them to come and and have that camaraderie, be around the guys. They have great stories. We have a Hall of Fame, and a lot of our Hall of Famers are some of the older guys, some of the mid-age. There's even a few late 40s in the Hall of Fame. So we honor our competitors through other competitors who nominate them. Sometimes the board of directors, we will nominate some people for Hall of Fame. But most of it is coming from your fellow teammates and competitors that have competed against you over the years.
David, if I could add something on that, you know, Edmund's correct in saying just in my time, you know, we have age categories that our competitors compete in. And generally, a lot of our most of our sports are based on a 5-year age increment. So you're competing on a fairly level playing field. You know, for example, if you're 40 to 44 years of age, that's what's called our master's age category. Then you'll compete against people in that age group. If you are really, really competitive and, you know, we have a lot of folks that truly are world-class level, then you can compete in the open division, which is the young, you know, 20 to 29 uh-huh. age category. But in recent times, we, as Edmund said, our numbers in the senior divisions, if you will, have increased so much that we have age categories above 80 years of age now. And, you know, that's incredible. I mean, when you think about the stair race, you know, we still have people in their 70s and 80s running the stair race. We have, you know, people that were retired fire chiefs competing in the ultimate firefighter at age 70. You know, we have a lot of, you know, retired police and fire chiefs that, you know, are in their 70s running track and field and doing swimming. And, you know, David, it's one of those things that when you're young on the fire department, I'm sure the police department as well, you know, you don't think about your health and wellness at retirement. And most people don't even think about retirement until, unfortunately, it's time to retire. Hmm. But our games, again, provide an outlet for those folks to maintain their health, give them something to look forward to, you know, travel around the world and again, see your friends and fellow competitors. And, you know, and it's a benefit to your health. So it's good to see that our numbers have been strong. We have had, believe it or not, some competitors that have competed in every single World Police and Fire game since 1985. And, you know, that's a testament to their health and well-being, you know, in itself, to say that you had been around that long and stayed healthy enough to compete. So it's something I'm certainly proud of, and I'm proud of our athletes for that and the fact that they've committed, you know, to maintaining their health. And it's great to see the competition again, you know, and their successes.
And you created really a platform where someone, it's not like a one-shot deal where you're just showing up for an event, but it takes preparation. So some level of commitment, some level of spending time working on it, building up to the event. So I think for those, particularly retirees who may have a little more time, having something like this as a purpose and a mission is it's got to be a very, very powerful thing.
I unloaded 32 years of emotion.
This job isn't a joke, and it can hurt you.
How does yoga or meditation help with that?
Coming to terms with who you are.
You know, nobody calls us because they're having a good day.
It's really the suicide that becomes a huge issue.
People are more trustworthy with the dog.
Sleep deprivation helps them either be better or worse.
Completely secretive when we started this.
So it's pretty much taboo.
Take care of the people next to you.
First responders really being open about what they're struggling with.
If we know that, let's raise awareness.
Brings you together to talk about it, and it tells you you're not alone.
It sounds like you guys went through a couple of iterations of different names, different kind of concepts. Can you speak a little bit about your recent rebrand and what does the new brand represent?
Well, recently we just went over to this new, I don't know if you can see this new logo, but this is our new logo right here. It's a police and fire coming together. And when we say police and fire, that's the whole first responders community. When you first think about first responders, people used to think, okay, first responders are the police and fire because they're responding to help, whether it's police, fire, or any kind of services. Now, there's so many different avenues of first responders out there. So, you know, over the years, we've included corrections, customs, and even though like the federal agents, they're all part of our family. So this rebranding is sort of like an all inclusive to our brand that we had before. Mm-hmm. Before it was like a flag brand, but we wanted something that was more updated, that would look more sporty. When you see this brand, we want people to recognize, because that's the United States Police and Fire Championship.
I know you talked about the USPFC Hall of Fame, and sounds like that's a nomination process for someone to be included in the Hall of Fame. Is that how it works?
Yes, that's a nomination process. We have it on our website, on both the USPFC and the World Police and Fire Games website. There's an application they can go on there and fill out and submit it to our director in charge by a certain date. I don't want to put that date out there, but I want to say March 1st, somewhere around there. Don't quote me, but you can always go on the website and look, and it'll give you the date as to when that has to be, and you nominate that person, and then that committee will look at it and they will submit it to the board and we vote.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely share your links on the show and our show notes. So I'm sure it takes a fair amount of manpower or people power and organizational power to put on these events. How do you have support staff? Where do they come from? What do they do? Is that something who's maybe not inclined to compete? They could participate as support staff in these events. Jim, can you answer that one?
Yeah, David, absolutely. You know, the lifeblood of our organization is volunteers, like most other organizations. Even in events such as the Olympics, you know, there's an overwhelming number of volunteers it takes to, you know, host those kinds of events. Our World Games is on a level similar to the Olympics. When you're talking about, you know, 70 sports, 10,000 athletes, you know, 90 countries, you know, showing up, it takes quite a number, you know, just in sports staff alone. If you've got 70 sports, then, you know, you would have to have 70 sport coordinators alone just to coordinate the events. And then each of those sports would have, you know, a number of officials and volunteers that are required. The USPFC is the same thing. We don't have, you know, quite have 70 sports, but generally we're in the 50 to 60 numbers of sports range. And it's the same thing on our level with the USPFC. We, as our board, you know, we have a lot more hands-on work to do. And part of that, again, is because of our passion, you know. But it also takes officials and volunteers and people that do want to step up and get involved. You know, I'm thinking of a guy, Dave Stewart, who is our soccer coordinator, and Edmund knows him quite well. You know, Dave is such a good guy and is so committed to that sport and does a tremendous job. I mean, I am blown away by Dave and his commitment to our soccer tournament. And, you know, he's a firefighter out of L.A., I believe, but he's since moved to Arizona. But, you know, his level of commitment is off the charts. And, you know, that's what truly makes our games a success, is when we have people like Dave and all the other folks that want to be involved because they love the sport. And, you know, they want to do something more. And so we're certainly always looking for those dedicated, committed folks.
That's fantastic. And, Edmund, is this information available on the website if somebody wants to volunteer, and certainly if somebody wants to find out more about participating as a team or athlete in the games?
Yes, it's on the website. We have a link on the website for volunteers. Nicole is in charge of our volunteer, our hospitality stuff. So she's the person they would be getting in touch with. They can go on there, sign up for different shifts of that nature. And if they have questions, they can send their questions to info at USPFC.org, and Nicole will get back with them. The name has changed over the years, and it's caused a little confusion, but we're still the same organization that started the California Police Olympics. So we wanted to get that information out, that we're still here and that we're still that outlet for police and fire to get out and show what they can do.
That's great. We are happy to help spread the word. Honestly, I had no idea this existed until Nicole reached out to me. And then as I investigated, I saw, wow, this is incredible. People need to know about this. And it's another way that our brotherhood and sisterhood can come together, but in a very fun and positive way, and support good mental health and good physical fitness and wellness. So, Jim, Edmund, it's been a pleasure talking with you both. Wish you continued success with the games, and we look forward to hearing more good stuff from you guys.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having us. We really appreciate this.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. Likewise.
Our pleasure. Remember to like and subscribe on YouTube, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc. We're on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the platforms for podcasts. And come to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.